Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi there, it's Jake Humphrey here. Welcome to this week's Premier League Tonight podcast. Of course, this week is an FA Cup special. We're here at the John Smith Stadium as Huddersfield host Manchester United in the fifth round of the oldest club competition in the game. And joining me this week, Robbie Savage, Steve McManaman and Paul Scholes to talk about all the big talking points of this weekend's football, as well as some of the usual anecdotal detours we go on along the way. And of course, the FA Cup never disappoints when it comes to drama. So here are the best bits of the show. Oh, and don't forget, the FA Cup is live on BT Sport throughout the season, and you can catch up with all the best moments of the Cup on the BT Sport app, as well as our dedicated social media platforms. We can talk VAR more, or we can talk about football.
My word, let's talk about football.
I was hoping you would say that. Right, let's have a look back at the headlines from today. It's been another busy one. Baggies, Cup, hangover. I'm sure you can see what we've done there. More bad news for Alan Pardew. More bad news for West Brom, out of the FA Cup. Defeated today by Southampton. Take a look at me now.
Like it.
Look at here. Getting on the score sheet. Brighton also winning today. Unlucky Coventry, their cup runners over. But Brighton march on into the quarterfinals. And the Swans stalemate. He was let go by Sheffield Wednesday. He went back there today with his new club, but he couldn't quite get the result. It's a yet another replay for Swansea. Right. We've spoken enough about what happened away from the football, so let's focus on the football. Here is Jose Mourinho with Dez.
Jose, where do you want to start? Should we start with Romelu Lukaku, who scored two important goals for you today and he's already cracked 21 goals in February?
Important goals, difficult match. We need to score. I think especially the first goal in the beginning gave us a little space for an hypothetical mistake. We know that we want to win this match, but a draw wouldn't be a drama and take the game to Old Trafford. So the first goal, obviously important to put us in a good position, and then the second goal almost to kill the game. Twice attacking the space well, then cold in the face of the goal, really good.
Did you think you'd killed the game before half-time? Because we had a confusing incident, I think we'll all agree on that one. What was your view on the VAR?
I keep saying that should be a referee's decision and not our decision. Why? Because the referees, they want to perform well. I don't think they are happy to make mistakes. And if they have the VAR to help them to make the right decision, I think that probably the referees would be happy with that. But if the VAR change their good decisions for bad decisions, I think they are not happy with that. During the game, of course, I don't know. Of course, I trust and I believe in the VAR. It's a bit frustrating because the moment I saw Kevin touching his heel and it stayed there for a long time, I thought something is going to happen. But I don't know what to say. It was a beautiful action, it was a beautiful goal. Then if it is offside or not offside, by the kneecap, by one hair, I don't know.
Should it just be used in a clear and obvious situation? Because when you're down to measuring a kneecap as an offside.
After our Premier League, the championship that I follow more obviously is the Portuguese one, and we have the VAR in every match in our Premier League, and I saw amazing things that put the true in the game, in the result, and that is an amazing feeling. But I also saw some controversial decisions that bring the VAR into a doubtful situation. I think our game is so beautiful that to change, we have to change for better.
So you think there's still a fair way to go, a long way to go to get VAR right?
Yeah. I'm happy if the decision is a little bit like the technology online on the goal line. You know, I'm really happy with that. I'm really, really happy with that. I don't want to score a goal if the ball was not inside. I don't want to concede a goal if the ball didn't cross totally the line. So I'm happy with that true that comes from the goal line technology. If they find a way in the VAR that the VAR is always right and always bring the truth, I'm happy with that.
That's what we all want. That's the problem, isn't it? VAR, that's always right, yeah, and is always true. And normally the issue with VAR are those incidents we are going to talk about. Normally those incidents which are subjective. The issue today is having all this furore about an offside which shouldn't be subjective, should it?
No. We should have just been able to get to the answer straight away, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
The fact that the lines were like this was just comical, wasn't it? And I had to talk about it, thinking that it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And the fact that there was so much waiting around, and of course, as soon as the lines goes out, everybody's, you can imagine what the people are like watching it on the telly. It just became an absolute shambles, wasn't it? And to talk over it was really confusing.
We only get those pictures.
Yeah, of course,
we choose what we're given. It took 1 minute 40 seconds to make the decision on the field. It took a further eight minutes plus for us to be sent from the VAR team a decision with a straight line. That is the problem, and Jose is quite right.
Yes.
Let's talk then about the football. It's one of those strange days where Romelu Lukaku bags a couple of goals. He's gone over 20 for the season, and a few people are talking about it. What did you think of his personal performance today?
Yeah, I thought he was very good, and there's probably a difference between the two teams, really. He didn't have a lot of the game. I don't think he wasn't involved a lot, because Huddersfield were very good in possession. They were excellent, but his two chances he had, he was deadly.
Just very clinical, Scholesy, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Very, very clinical. I think that's all you can say. I thought Huddersfield were excellent, but this is a really good part of his game. Holds up play, spin, turn, and then this is just about strength, isn't it?
And the goalkeeper? Well, or is that just Romelu being clever?
Yeah, I think so. I'd like
Crazy
to think
striker.
It was.
Yeah,
it's a good play
Obviously,
for him.
The pitch up like that, he can go left and he can go right.
We need to see more of that from him, because the power and the speed of him, he needs to run in behind a lot more, and today he was very good. The last few weeks, we haven't really seen it. Maybe lost a little bit of confidence, but here again, I think he starts out in his own half, and look at him, he's off. And just defenders, especially defenders of this level, they can't live with that.
Yeah.
But then he's got to find the clinical bit, and he's
that's
done that
what
as well.
You want to see from Manchester United as well, isn't it?
Yeah, they had to play that way today. They had to play on the counter-attack because Huddersfield were so good in possession, as good as I've seen an Huddersfield team, to be honest with you. And their only scraps were playing on the counter-attack. And you had to say, every time United went forward, they did look very dangerous.
Well, let's talk then about Manchester United's approach overall. For the first sort of 40 minutes, it was confusing to kind of see the plan from Jose Mourinho. And you two had a really good chat in here about what he was trying to do.
They've won the game first and foremost, and you know, as Lukaku's two goals was brilliant. But then that 4-3-3 shape, so they had really three holding midfielders. McTominay, Carrick was in the centre, and Matic on the left. And they had Sanchez on the left up front, Lukaku and Mata. So the problem was down, and I'm sure I thought Maka said in commentary, was down this right-hand side, had a Garnacho and the centre-forward pulling out wide. So what happened was that, for me, as a midfield player, in the left of the three, I'd be the one looking to get across. The argument to say, has Sanchez got to track the full-back? That is the big question. Has Sanchez been brought to track runners in the left-back position for most of the first half? I'm not so sure he has. I think, as a midfield player there, Matic, the question would be, has Matic got the legs to keep getting out there? So if you're the left side of a three in there, I think you've got to help out there and let Sanchez be the free spin up there. But he's worked hard for the team, Sanchez. He kept coming back. So he's probably out of his position, would have been in a left midfield position, Sanchez.
Well, when did he come back, Sav? I don't remember seeing him come back.
He came back a few times, scores he? But as a midfielder there.
I would think I just think he turns it. When you're under the cosh like they were today, and Huddersfield had more possession early on, as far as I'm concerned, you just become a five across midfield. Sanchez is back alongside the three, and Matt is back, and Lukaku's there. And I thought they pinpointed that, and you could see he didn't fancy Chaka back. Yeah. United got the result, and they're in the draw.
They were three for two. Might have outnumbered Huddersfield, right? So they had Ince as a free spirit. So if you're the left midfielder and you've got 3 for 2, surely you've got to get across.
Well, that's up to the manager. Yeah. We don't know what the manager said, do we? Yeah, we don't know if Sanchez just leave him, you just stay, you just half-cheat, and Matic, you be the one to get across. But I don't think Matic was the right person for that job. He hasn't really got the legs anymore to do that. If you saw in the second half, he was almost playing as a left-back.
Yeah.
He almost played with two left-backs because they recognised the problem, and Sanchez almost played as a centre-forward.
I don't think you should do that all the time. I just think when you're under pressure for 10 minutes, because they had the ball all the time, and we're coming down this flank all the time, you just say, right, we're going to go to a five, stop them playing, and then once you get a little bit of a foothold, then you become a three again. Then we go three and three.
Let me put this to you then. So if this was Man City, so I've seen Rashford playing for Manchester United. He's in the left-back or right-back position more than he's forward. It's Martial. I think in this side, under Mourinho, they're that bothered about going backwards, whereas Man City, those players are forward. So you've got Fernandinho, you've got players in there, Kevin De Bruyne.
Because they're in possession all the time, Sav. Well, today, United couldn't get in
Manchester
position.
Manchester United against Huddersfield.
Yeah, but today they couldn't get in position. Yeah, we have to give Huddersfield credit because they didn't allow United, who played probably three holding midfield players in a space of a little 10-yard area, McTominay, Carrick and Matic, they just couldn't get on the ball. They just couldn't control
play. I wouldn't necessarily have a go at United today.
You have to
give the respect to the other team who, you know, they had a really good game today, didn't they, Huddersfield? They played really well.
Yeah, I'm just going to say, if you're in control of the play, if your midfield players are in control of the play, Sanchez can go to the left.
Yeah, do whatever he wants.
Would it bother you playing in a team with Sanchez playing like that?
Would it bother me?
Yeah.
Again, it depends what the manager wants.
Yeah.
And depends how much possession you've got of the ball. If you've got the ball more times than, and they did when he played, you can play with wingers and nice and wide and open the pitch up. But once you're under pressure from the other team, there's times when you have to go, right, everybody get in, and let's just see this 10, 15-minute period out, and then we'll beat them. When they get tired, then we'll take over. And they did, United. They weren't at the best, but they were just really clinical this evening.
I'll tell you one, if I was a left-hand side midfielder like Matic, I wouldn't like it.
No.
No, you'd be onto Sanchez all the time to get back with
him.
And Luke Shaw, especially, but they're not very vocal. They're very quiet players, aren't they? They're the ones that need to get back because all the problems that were caused with the right hand side. Okay, they've won the game 2-0 and it was quite comfortable in the end. But the problems the first 20 minutes with the right hand side with nobody going back with him.
But the fact that they raided so many times—that's what—that's why Chris Smalling was so important today.
He had a great game.
And in all of this, we're talking about Huddersfield playing so well. Let's very briefly show you Huddersfield's forthcoming fixtures, because actually, Robbie, the next few games will determine their future in the Premier League. Look at that: West Brom, Swansea, Palace, Newcastle. That's it for them.
Yeah, those are the games. The Spurs game. I don't think they'll get anything there, but the West Brom, Swansea, Palace, Newcastle, if they can win those games or get points out of those, great chance of staying up.
Tweets coming in already on the draw. Probably the best one is Joe, who says, highlight of today's FA Cup, Michael Owen struggling to open a bag.
That wasn't fair, was it, that? Someone's fixed him up.
Man United and Man City, if they get through against Wigan, will be very happy, won't they?
Yeah, of course we are. I think we should just fast forward to the semi-finals.
Oh, you're that confident?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Get the four big ones. Well, I think the only one is Leicester-Chelsea. I think Leicester have a chance of beating Chelsea, but you'd expect the other teams, Tottenham, Man United and Man City, to go through.
What's your dream? Chelsea in the semi, City in the final and win it?
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Leicester, though, yeah, they, as we heard there from Michael, they can go for this. They can really give Chelsea a game. This is their competition now, nothing else.
Yeah, I think Michael's right. You know, safe in the Premier League, not going to get relegated, no chance of Europe. So what a chance for Claude Puel, who got to a cup final with Southampton, albeit being the, you know, the League Cup final. But they'll fancy their chances home to Chelsea, no question.
And so much is made, isn't it, of Pochettino not winning a trophy at Tottenham. This is opening up for them so nicely. They beat Newport to make it through to this round. With all due respect to their opponents, they're going to be up against Rochdale and then either Sheffield Wednesday or Swansea to be in an FA Cup semi-final. You can't ask for much more than that if you're Tottenham, can you?
No, but actually it doesn't matter to you, because once you get to the semi-final, you're going to hit one of the big boys. That's what it looks like. And if they lose in the semi-final, or even lose in the final, we'll still be talking about Pochettino needs to win a trophy. And sooner rather than later, you're going to have to get there. You're going to have to show, you know, your means. And the big players who have stood up this year, let's say that, you know, the fact that, you know, the Harry Kanes and of this ilk have been exceptional this year. But sooner rather than later, whether it's the Champions League, it's not going to be the league, is it? So it's going to be the FA Cup as well. So they're in a great opportunity now.
Let's just recap the draw for you very briefly. Sheffield Wednesday or Swansea will play Rochdale or Tottenham. It's Manchester United Brighton, which is a repeat of the 1983 FA Cup final. Leicester, Chelsea and Wigan or Man City against Southampton. So Shakara, United and City get home draws. They'll be pleased with that. But let's speak to a man who will be in action this weekend with his team. Keith Hill, the Rochdale manager, joins us right now. Well, Keith, look, we've just had the draw for the quarter-final, but I imagine you and none of your players will be looking beyond the Tottenham game, right?
Correct.
How are you feeling about it?
Well, the fixture is super, to be honest. We've had a good week to plan it. We was on the pitch today, did a run through, team shape, so we're looking forward to it now.
When you say the pitch, let's talk about the pitch. I sort of have always had the impression that when a big team goes to a lower league side, the pitch can be a bit of a leveller. I know it's as difficult for your players to play on a bad pitch as it is for Tottenham, but have you not given them a slight advantage if you've turned your ground into a carpet?
To be honest, the pitch needed replacing. It was never going to be sustainable till the end of the season. So it was going to get ripped up and replaced regardless of whether we'd beat Millwall or not. So it's just going to serve the purpose to at least the end of the season. We've got a really good pitch laid down now. And that should see us, in good stead for the future as well.
Keith, Robbie, I know a lot of people who watch you quite regularly, and you know, I thought the reports are saying, you know, the pitch, you know, would suit you better, but I think that was really unfair. I heard your CEO on the radio giving a passionate explanation of why, you know, you like to play good football as well. So I thought it was quite poor saying, well, you know, some Spurs players could get injured because some of your players could get injured too. You like to play good football as well.
Yeah, we certainly do. We want to play good football. We want to be a possession-based team, fundamentally. But the pitch and the media sort of like negativity towards the pitch. The pitch against Millwall was playable. There was no injury concern for anybody. You know, the referee passed it fit to play. And we deserved to win that, but the chaos afterwards around the pitch, it was unfounded, but we've done the right thing with the football club for the sustainability of the team for next season. You know, but it just so happens coincides with what is found in the picture against Tottenham in the FA Cup.
Keith, Stevie McManaman here. Have you got any special plans for the Tottenham players, particularly Harry Kane, if he plays?
Not in particular. We don't want to scare the players too much. We've just gone through our due diligence as we were doing this a League One opposition. You know, and we've just got about our usual work. We want to try and employ similar sort of tactics that we've used against the League One side. And again, we don't want to surrender too much possession to the opposition team. Obviously, Tottenham are very good in possession. So we want to make the most of possession, obviously, by attacking, but special plans? No, not really.
All right. Well, look, Keith, all of us wish you the very best of luck.
Best of luck.
You know, we hope that it's a game to remember, and we'll see what happens. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
Appreciate it. Good man. Thank you very much. Look, it's going to be a really difficult challenge for them, but we recently saw Newport do exactly that, took Tottenham to their place and got a draw out of it.
Yeah, and I think they'll take that before the game. Tottenham are a really good side. It's not just Kane. As Steve said, there's many good players in that Tottenham team who are in terrific form at the time. Rochdale will have the work cut out. Mm. But as Robbie said, they like to play football as well. They're a decent footballing team. They have to just hope that Tottenham don't quite fancy it on the day and Rochdale will have a good day.
Have you seen much of Dale this season? Obviously, they're local rivals for your Oldham side. I think they play you in a
in the not-too-distant future?
Yeah, the close rivals, but no, I've not seen a lot of them. I know they're struggling at the bottom of the league. They have got a lot of games in hand, though. Obviously, with the pitch, they've had a lot of games off. It's a very big rivalry, actually, Oldham Rochdale. Yeah. I don't know if you know about that. I think it's coming up in a couple of weeks. That's a big game because both sides are struggling at the bottom of League One, and hopefully Oldham will win.
He'll have a plan, though, won't he, Keith Hill? He will have a plan.
Well, he should do, wouldn't he? He's the manager. I think the plan is just to score first.
He is.
I think that's his ideal plan.
Yeah.
But he will be working on special things in training, special set pieces, where he feels Tottenham are weak, hoping probably that Tottenham will rest some of their star players. And as Scholes, he said, just take their eye off the ball slightly because they may be thinking about more important games. And he's hoping that his team will perform to the absolute limit. It's a bit of a mismatch, of course it is, but we've had those mismatches in the FA Cup and we sort of want one of those mismatches again, don't we? Because it seems to be getting too predictable now that the bigger teams are way, way better. The gap seems to be lengthening and lengthening and lengthening. So it would be great if we're all brought down to our knees a little bit and a little bit of FA Cup romanticism again. I know, sorry.
You're right there.
It's easy to say that.
Let's move on and talk about...
I think so, let's move on.
Yeah, let's talk about West Brom. They weren't in the draw, knocked out today, knocked out by Southampton. Let's hear from some West Brom fans. They are not happy with what's going on at the moment, haven't they?
West Brom's season is lurching from one disaster to another. This warm weather training camp wasn't exactly popular with Albion fans after the loss at Chelsea at the weekend, and it definitely won't be now.
As a fan, I've always been a huge advocate of, you know, respecting that players are, you know, they're young guys, they've got a life themselves. But given the position the club are in, you know, really cut adrift at the bottom of the table, it just adds another kind of ridiculous chapter to what's kind of spiralling into a disastrous season for the Albion. So, yeah, really, really not that impressed.
I follow this club home and away, and we're in a really bad position at the moment. And it just seems like this just gives the impression that the players couldn't care less.
OK, well, let's have a look at a couple of the newspaper headlines here. You can see here in the Times, West Brom shamed by taxi theft. The Mirror have gone with taxi for this lot. That seems to be the theme, as you would expect. It seems like they stole a taxi. What are they doing? What are they doing? They're in a relegation battle. They've gone away for some warm weather training. The West Brom fans have been through the ringer all season. Why do this? It is ridiculous, huh?
Yeah, well, it's ridiculous because, I know this sounds stupid, we've all been on trips, right? We've all been on trips where, you know, warm weather training, where the manager says, listen, if you're in a relegation battle, if you're out of the FA Cup, yeah, go there for team spirit. And, you know, 99% of the trips are good because you're bond, you have a good time. But as soon as something like this happens, you know, it's unacceptable. You know, I've been on trips where, you know, things have happened. We've come home before a cup final. It's
like what?
There was the fire extinguisher once, do you remember?
Frank Collymore.
Yeah, in La Manga, where, you know, the lads had a few drinks we were out of order, we all got sent home, and it was wrong because it was completely wrong. But the experience, the worry would be the experienced guys doing it. But we've all been on trips where things have happened, but the unlucky thing for those guys is...
Not unlucky, though, is it?
No, it's not lucky for them. They've been caught. They've been caught. They've done a stupid thing, and they will be punished. But I'm not going to sit here and... it's wrong. It's completely and utterly wrong. Let me say that.
But it just makes you wonder what's going on at a football club where players think that that is an OK thing to do. Doesn't it?
I think the thing is the situation they're in as well makes it a little bit worse. Bottom of the league, you know, really, really struggling performance-wise. And the manager will be really disappointed. It's the most experienced players as well that have done it. Well, they'll be embarrassed about it, but is it really that bad? We've all been out at 5 a.m. desperate to get home, haven't we?
If I were, in all seriousness,
I don't know how desperate to get home. That's the main thing.
We can laugh about it. But if I was on a BT Sport trip and nicked a taxi while covering a Europa League game, I'd expect to lose my job.
Yeah, well, these can't lose a job. They're worth money.
They're worth money. Exactly, 25 million.
You're worth a few quid, Jay.
What are you saying?
It's unforgivable, unfortunately, but you can't just say, let's just sack them.
I'm not saying you should sack them.
No, I know, but you just said lose your job. So they can't lose the job because they're suddenly worth £20 million pounds to somebody else. But I understand the scenario you're saying. It's unforgivable. The situation they are, the fact that I don't know who lost their jobs midweek, the managing director, the chief exec, I'm not entirely sure. But there's an undercurrent there that is not good, is it? And it's just transpired now that they've got warm weather training from between Monday and Saturday.
Is it that warm in Arsenal this time of year?
Well, they had a game on Monday, didn't they? They've had a game on Saturday and they've gone to a different country to play and to train.
Yeah, the timing of it's strange, really, isn't it? You normally go away when you've got a weekend off.
Yeah. But, you know, it's unforgivable what they've done.
Jake, let me say it's wrong. It's wrong. Yeah. But we've all been on trips and the reason it's wrong, if they'd have gone there and just trained and come back and nothing happened, all's fine. But they've gone, they've done something wrong and they're going to be punished.
You see, I haven't done what you've done and travelled away with a load of lads and had a good time as footballers. But I look at it and I think that there's either they haven't got the discipline from the manager or there's a bit of a lack of respect for playing for West Brom or a bit of disrespect to the fans and the club that you represent. I mean, look, let's go back to the famous dentist chair that you were involved in. Is that because of a lack of discipline or is that just because young guys will go out and have a few drinks and do daft things? Is it just no more than that?
Well, speaking personally about that, because we mentioned it, it was just, we were just having a couple of drinks, albeit in a chair. I mean, there was nothing untowards going on. There was nothing, we didn't do anything wrong. We've been allowed to go out and have a few drinks. Yeah. It's just that unfortunately that sometimes the pictures portrayed, a lot of the stories that came out were completely nonsensical as well.
Right.
But at the time when when I was in the dentist chair having a drink, I was sober as a judge at the time. But sometimes the pictures betray the real story. And I think I was embarrassed about the pictures that came out. But I hadn't done anything wrong. I hadn't broken the law. We were allowed to have a couple of drinks. I think it was somebody's birthday at the time. And the pictures looked awful. So as far as I was concerned, at that particular time, I didn't do anything wrong. You get castigated for various things.
Are you telling me you weren't drunk that night?
Absolutely not.
Really?
See how much it takes for me to get drunk.
I've been on loads of trips away from home with teams when you've broke curfews. But you get away with it because you're not being caught.
That's why you got away with it.
That's why you got away with it. But do you mean caught. In terms of, you know, the manager might say get in at 12 o'clock, the lads will be climbing through windows at 4
o'clock. I don't know what this full story is. They stole a taxi or something?
The story is, that's been reported, is they took a taxi, took it back to their hotel room and went up to the
bed. They drove with themselves?
And left the taxi. And
when lads are away on a drink, they're always push the barriers, won't they?
Yeah.
But when you'll always see if you get an extra hour.
When you were playing in teams, though, that were winning Champions Leagues and Premier Leagues, did this sort of stuff go on? Or do you think that you were so disciplined and you were such a bunch of winners that it was maybe different?
No, we still had nights out. We still went on trips. We, had nights out.
Didn't
break curfews. We didn't, do anything untoward, I suppose. That was, something as... Mm. As crazy as this is, that we know's wrong. We had drinks, of course. We had good time at times, but when the right time was available for us to do it.
Let's get the thoughts of a few West Brom fans. Jimmy says, Pardew isn't the only one who's been let down. It's the West Brom fans who pay their money, turn up week in, week out to watch their team. They're bottom of the league, the players are overpaid and on a club trip to Barcelona, and this is how they repay the loyal fans. I mean, that's the general consensus that really sort of sticks in the
throat. I get that completely, absolutely.
Under Pulis, we park the bus, and under Pardew, we steal a taxi. That's an improvement in my book, says all things Albion. West Brom have stolen as many taxis under Alan Pardew as they've won Premier League games. Also factually correct, Daniel. Stephen Jackson, the club should throw the book at them. They don't care about the club, the fans or anyone who get in their way on a night out. The club are in decline, the players have down tools. Neil says West Brom should put a 75% reduction in wages in their contract with our relegation, see how much they care then. And Jonathan Sykes said you should sack the four of them and the FA should ensure a 3-year ban is in place. So they've lost today, they're out of the FA Cup. I'm not saying the stealing of the taxi it can be in any way seen as a good thing, but going on a foreign trip and galvanising the guys, can you sort of understand Alan Pardew's thinking behind doing that? Like, these trips work today? Do they work?
I get that.
Yeah, I can.
For that bonds and session.
Yeah.
He's trying probably everything to get the best out of his team. He's probably saying, let's go away, let's have a couple of meals together, let's have a few beers together, let's do something to garnish the camaraderie so when we go back, we'll win and then we'll climb the league. Of course, I can see what he's doing. I wouldn't dare have a go at him for that. Because every team would do exactly the same in a position. Whether it's go out in your local village or go out in a different country or go out something, they'll try anything to get going.
And what does this do for Alan Pardew? As you said, there's been changes at the top. The chief executive and chairman have just been relieved of their positions. If you are running that football club, it leads to questions, doesn't it, about the manager's control of the players, and that's not good for Alan.
Well, we said it before, didn't we, that, on a radio show I do, a lot of West Brom fans phone in saying that, Pulis has to go because, A, we're not getting the results and it's dull and boring to watch. But I still believe, even with Tony Pulis in charge, he might have kept. We probably would have kept them up. You know, they're in the bottom three now, bottom of the table.
But he's never been relegated, was he? So you'd always trust them.
So the consensus was the fans. Some of the fans I spoke to didn't care if they went down. They just wanted to sit in their seat and be entertained. So that's their prerogative. They pay their money to go and watch West Brom. But the bottom of the table now, I haven't seen that much of an improvement in their style of football. But and he got the job, by the way. He only won 6 games in the calendar year at Crystal Palace. So now he's in charge of West Brom. Good luck to him. Good luck to him. If he keeps it, wonderful. There was a great victory at Liverpool in the FA Cup. Yeah?
Yeah.
And
but that's not what they need, is it? No. They need Premier League wins and they've got one of them.
Yeah, they're desperate now for...
Under Allen.
Well, they're way behind now. They're lagging, really, in the league. You need to get them galvanised. You need to get over this little episode they've had and try and somehow get them to win football matches.
Do you make another change of manager? Or do you just say, look, we've already done this once. It hasn't had the desired effect, but now, kind of, we've made our bed, we lie in it. Alan Pardew's the man till the end of the season, regardless. What's next?
It's a very, very difficult question. I would stick with him because... You brought him in to try and do a job. I'd stick with him. You can't bring any more football players in to help. He's brought Daniel Sturridge in. But it's not looking good at this moment. It's not looking good at all. I still fancy them because when I look at the characters in the team, I think, you know what? But sooner or later, they are getting cut adrift, aren't they?
7 points behind Huddersfield, who seem galvanised. Good performance today. Yeah. 7 points.
Yeah, Swansea are in great form. You know, Crystal Palace, you know they can get a win if they really want to.
It's incredible the fact that Stoke... You know, and West Brom are both down there. When I think they changed the managers when they were out of those positions.
Yeah.
You know, we always say, oh, this club's got a bounce and isn't it great? Like Carvajal's gone to Swansea. Yeah. But on the flip side, you see West Brom and Stoke are struggling now.
But then we wrote off Crystal Palace earlier in the season and Crystal Palace bounced back, didn't they? You know, West Brom have got Huddersfield next. You do kind of feel if Huddersfield win that, they'll be on 30 points. West Brom will be 10 behind and that will pretty much be curtains for them, won't it? We put this question to the guys last week. Look at the bottom three at the moment. Who's favourite to go through for you, from your perspective?
It's
to
go down.
To go down, yeah.
I think you'd have to say them three that are down there now. I've still got a feeling Stoke might get out of it. I think they've got enough quality in their team. Swansea have done great over the last few weeks. You have to say that. They've climbed out there very well. Can they still get sucked in? I think they can. Well, they're not out of it. They're not get sucked
They're
in.
Only a point above, aren't they?
And Palace aren't safe. They've gone a little bit of a dodgy run at the minute. Palace with injuries as well. That won't help. Huddersfield, say if they play like they did today, they'll be OK. But can they repeat them performances in league games?
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't
it? You worry a bit though, Steve, don't you? For Crystal Palace, who've already been on a really good run under Roy and maybe sort of felt, oh, maybe we're going to save ourselves, but have been sucked back in and now got injuries. Swansea, who've been on a brilliant run under Carvajal, but are still just a point above the relegation zone. Huddersfield, who won last week. You know, you can't go on a run and still be there because you're gonna have a blip as well.
But there's teams even above that that can get dragged back. That's the thing. You know, Stoke, if they win, they go out of that picture, which is mad, isn't it? So... You know, I couldn't choose any of them. There's times when certain teams, and a lot of them are pictured there, have been so Jekyll and Hyde this year that you don't know what kind of performance you're going to get next off them. I was disappointed with Huddersfield at home to Liverpool, and I was thrilled with them today. I know it's an FA Cup game. So, you know, you're forever changing your mind, saying, well, if they play like that next week, they'll be fine. But yet you see another performance that they'll just down tools at times. You know, we've watched that much football this year that some of the teams, you can't believe they're doing well because I've seen them play complete dross this year.
But that's why they're there, though. It's the inconsistency, isn't it?
But there's 8 or 9 or 10 of them that can get dragged in if someone wins 3 games. You know, they're up by Everton. It's just mad.
Bournemouth went on a good run.
Yeah.
You know, they're mid-table. So just a consistent run of game and you'd be out of it.
Yeah. But then, you know, Bournemouth go on that great run there, I think 18th at Christmas, moved up to 9th, then come here and get beaten by Huddersfield. It's just, it's that league.
And if they lose their next two, they'll be in that snapshot. They'll be back there again. So because it's so tight and everybody has to play each other, there's going to be a hell of a lot of movements for, you know, from now till the end of the season, isn't it? That's why, you know, I couldn't tell you who would be in the bottom three. You can have a pick, but there's no way you're going to be right because it'll fool us all in the end.
It's mad actually down there this year, isn't it? It's so tight.
What does he know about that?
Well, he's looked at the league table. He's looked at the league table.
Yeah, but he wouldn't know about that. No, will he?
He's an Oldham fan.
He's just coming to me at that one at the bottom of the table.
Okay, right. Lots more still to come. We're going to be talking about managers that you would still love to be involved in the game. We'll get the thoughts of these guys. Also, a dream five-a-side team we're going to discuss as well. But first, here's some fans with their reaction to the FA Cup quarter-final draw.
So it's Leicester City away. That is a pretty decent draw. I'm happy with that. We've avoided the big boys and this is a winnable fixture. Leicester in the Cup is also synonymous for us with victory in the Cup because in 1997 we played Leicester at Stamford Bridge and Erlen Johnson, the hero, went over for a definite penalty. We knocked Leicester out. We went on to lift our first trophy for 25 years. So, Leicester, all being well, we're off to Wembley. You Blues.
United away. That is definitely by far the hardest draw we could have asked for on paper. That's definitely going to be a tough one. Mourinho is going in with decent form. He loves a good cup competition as well.
Well, 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 Manchester City have got Southampton at home in the quarterfinals of the FA Cup. Now, I'm looking forward to this game. Number one, it's at home, so I'll definitely be going. But number two, we've already played Southampton, and it was arguably one of the games of the year with Raheem Sterling getting a 96-minute winner. I don't think Southampton are as strong now that Van Dijk's gone. And us, we're just kicking into gear. Could the quadruple still be on?
Third match reports continue to flood in, but I think the only one that really matters today is from Chris Byrne, and it is VAR, are you serious?
Throw that tumbleweed across there for us, lads.
VAR, are you serious, Phil? Do you miss playing? You miss playing?
Yeah, a little bit.
You'd rather be out there.
Rather be out there, yeah.
Genuinely, though, do you? Genuinely?
Yeah.
Like, it's like every day you wake up and think, oh, I'd love to be at training today. Or is it just on match days when you come and work with us, you look at it and think,
Yeah, I suppose you don't miss the training so much, do you? It's just match days when you come in, you see an atmosphere like this, you see a pitch like that, and you see the players that are playing, you want to play with them.
Well, you did retire, didn't you? Didn't come back twice, but you come back, didn't you? You retired once, and come back against Man City. So when you retired the first time, what did you? You weren't ready. Do you mean you weren't ready, or did you come back?
I thought at the time I was ready because when I was playing games, I just didn't feel legs. I felt had gone. I wasn't having an effect on games that I'd like to. So I saw the manager quite early before the end of the season. I said, look, I'm going to finish. He said, no, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. Another 15, 20 games. I said, no, I've made my decision. 15, 20 games. I didn't really see how I could prepare myself properly for them games. So I called it a day.
Do you still play any, like, I know you played some sort of charity matches and stuff. Do you still really enjoy playing them now? I was going to say that, yeah.
The hardest thing is trying to get... You don't get fit for them. Nope. You get semi-fit, don't you? And try your best and try not to show yourself up. But yeah, I love
them. Yeah, I mean, I've played games with you. Yeah. You always seem to enjoy yourself, don't you?
So. Yeah, I love them.
And do you still watch football and feel frustrated? You see players now think, oh, why didn't you do that? Or I could have done that. Or
no, not
do you
really,
have to let that go.
Yeah, you have to let it go because I can't affect that anymore. When I was on the pitch, I could do something about it. I'd try and do something about it. Watching now, it's out of my control. There's nothing I can do about that. I can see things that I maybe don't like and things I do like, but you know, as far as missing it in that way and looking at it as if I can affect a game, I can't do that. It's nothing to do with me anymore.
So you go and see Sir Alex because you think that you're not impacting games as much as you wish, and between you decide, okay, that's it. Then you decide to come back. How did the comeback manifest itself?
He wanted me originally to come back and coach the reserve team with Warren Joyce, under 23s, I think they call it now. And I said in September I'll come back, so I had a good three or four months with the family. Had some nice holidays and came back in the September. Started helping Joyce. He started training with him more than often than that. I was training every day with the likes of Pogba, Lingard, it was that, Lionel Cole, it was all these type of players who were a really good side, and I was loving training. I was getting as fit as anybody know. Joyce's training, he's like a sergeant major. He has the fittest team at the football club without a shadow of a doubt. And I was fit, I felt great. It got to December time. The team was struggling a little bit. They had a load of injuries. No central midfield players, really. I think they ended up playing Phil Jones and Fabio De Silva in centre midfield in a game, I think it was against Blackburn at Old Trafford. And they really struggled. I think, funnily enough, that was the end of Pogba that night because he thought he should have been playing in centre midfield that night instead of them two. Whereas it happens, he was playing the reserve team, wasn't doing well enough in the reserve team to warrant that. So I went to Joyce and I just said, look, I'm thinking of coming back. I think I spoke to Gary Neville, spoke to Phil Neville, see what they thought about it.
And I bet their reaction was yes, yeah?
There was, Gaz especially was the one who encouraged me to go and see Mick Phelan. I went to see his assistant manager, I went to his office. And I was nervous about doing it because I thought, you know, really? what are they going to say? You know, what if he says no? But I'd made my mind, if he'd have said no, I'd have gone on to play for somebody else. I just wanted to
play. So at that point, you were coming back?
Yeah. I was coming back, whatever happened, whether it was for another team Also, I didn't want to play for another team, obviously. I obviously want to play for United, so I went to see Mick, and Mick thought it was a great idea.
Mr. Alex? Did he in any
Well, that was the next stage. Yeah. It's all right, Mick think it was a great idea. Does the manager think it's a great idea? So, day after, still nervous, knocked on his door and said, look, I'm thinking of coming back to play. And he said, great, straight away. He said, let me ring David Gill and we'll sort your contract out.
Wow. And then he didn't tell the players, is that right?
You no.
Why was that?
I don't know. I think he just wanted to keep it quiet. We was playing City away, and he said, "Just come to the hotel, the Lowry, on the. I think it was a Saturday night. I think he was playing them on a Sunday, and he said, just come and sit on the staff table, have a glass of wine, or maybe half a glass of wine with us. Just don't say a word. And then I get to the ground the next day. I know what's going on, so I'm obviously a little bit nervous at that point, wondering what lads are going to think and." We get in the dressing room and my shirt's there and I'm named a substitute.
So do you think that was a bit of mind games from Sir Alex? Something just to inspire those lads? Because did he tell them in the dressing room when you finally got to the ground or what?
Yeah, I think he just announced it in the dressing room.
Put the team sheet up and there you were on the
bench. Yeah, he said Scholes is going to be sub, he's back.
And the reaction from your teammates?
It was good. I was with Danny.
Laughing.
What are you doing?
I remember Danny Welbeck was the one next. He said, I knew something was going on. So I've been training. I was supposed to play a reserve game the week before against Newcastle, but got called off. So I'd been training. I think I trained once with the first team before I came back. I had to sort some boots out. I had to go down to the local shop and buy a pair of.
You didn't.
A pair of cheap boots, yeah. Because I didn't have a sponsor. Did I? I didn't have a tie. We couldn't let Nike know because. It was it'd be obvious I was coming back, so I didn't know at the time, but the boots I got were a little bit of a rip-off, I think.
About 50, so you just went down to your local sports shop and bought some boots to play for your Man United comeback?
Yep. And I always remember the game itself, I think we were 3-0 up when I came on, against 10 men, and it went to 3-2. I gave the first goal away, and I thought, what am I doing? I remember David Platt was... He was coach, I think, was it Mancini,
Yeah.
He was assistant manager of Mancini. I'm warming up, and the manager says, right, come on, 3-0 up, half an hour to go. Go and play the last half an hour. So I'm taking my gear off, and David Platt said to me, what the hell are you doing? No idea. I don't know. I wish he hadn't done it. At that time, I was thinking, what am I doing here? Coming onto a game, we're playing against a really good City team. Obviously, you think it's quite comfortable, 3-0 up.
Yeah.
Half an hour to go, 20 minutes one to go, and I think I gave a bad pass for a throw-in. Sergio Aguero nipped onto it and scored. So it's 3-1. You think it's still comfortable, it'll still be an easy game. Then they score again, and you're panicking and thinking, what have I just done? And then from then, that season was great. I did, you know, we almost won the league. City obviously won it with Aguero in the last minute, which was disappointing. I really wish I'd stopped then. That was enough, really, because... You know, we got to the next season. The manager gave me another year, but I was gone the first time. I was definitely gone this time. I remember playing a game against Tottenham at home. It's only the third, fourth game of the season. I think we got beat at home 3-2. I played all right in possession, but I remember Dembele just cruising past me. Gareth Bale, I know they cruise past people, but I was watching, thinking I can't do this anymore, and just got through the season. I wanted to retire again very early that season. But I just thought I'd look stupid. It'd been a bit embarrassing. I had to try and stay around and just try and help the team when I could.
You know what I find really interesting about that story is for a player so talented and so skilled who found, from the outside looking on, found the game so easy, was the amount of nerves you had, whether it was speaking to Mike Phelan, knocking on Sir Alex's door, warming up on the side of the pitch, that, you know, Paul Scholes was anxious about coming and playing a game of football or a bit nervous about how it would go.
You haven't played a game for 6 months and this is... No, it's not just some League One team, League Two. This is the team that are challenging for the league title. At the time, we're looking like they weren't going to challenge for the league title and you're seeing legends of the game. Sir Alex Ferguson to go and knock on his door and ask him. It's scary because he could just say no. He said, no, what you think? No, know what you're thinking about. It could have gone totally the opposite way and... I was grateful that he said, yeah, it could have been a mistake. It was obviously a gamble for him. But I think in the 6 months, like I say, 6 months towards the end, I did okay. It was disappointing City won the league. That was a big thing at the end of it. But I wish now, looking back, that I'd stopped then, really.
Fascinating. Thanks for sharing the story. And one final question. when you go to bed at night and you shut your eyes and you dream about being a pro again, what is the one thing that you miss now? Is it the emotion when you score a goal? Is it just the camaraderie with the teammates? Is it training? Is it... What is the thing? What is the one thing that gave you the biggest thrill?
I don't think it's the one thing. Look, I love training every day. It was a thrill training. Camaraderie, it was something I take or leave. Really. Obviously, it's great being a part of a team and being part of a special team. Winning them trophies is the thing that you really miss when it comes to the end of the season, when you talk about March, April time, when you're fighting for something. That's what it was all about for me. Scoring goals, these lads will tell, there's no better feeling than scoring a goal. Whether it's at home, whether it's at away ground in front of these brilliant United fans, whether it's at Old Trafford and they start to sing your name when you score a goal, I don't think there's any bigger thrill in your life than you'll get than that.
Interesting. Really fascinating. One more comeback?
Yeah, give me 6 weeks.
Eh?
Six weeks and a pair of boots.
It'll still be brilliant. Steve is the most modest man in football, if you didn't know already. He always plays down his achievements, his talents, his abilities. So I'll say it for him. An incredibly talented, naturally gifted footballer.
who went
abroad and was one of the greatest English exports to the foreign game. Another match in a Champions League final. And he's still doing things like this. Take a look at the recent Liverpool training, because they've got a Legends match coming up. Ian Rush at the grand old age of 56, doing bits and not a bad finish from our very own Steven Gerrard. Now, I messaged you about this pass to Ian Rush here, and you said, I find that sort of stuff really easy. Yeah. Do you?
Yes. I had my faults. I couldn't tackle. I wasn't great in the air or whatever, things like that. But certain things like outside of my right
foot. Look at that.
Sticking it on a plate for Ian Rush.
What?
I found things like that really easy
really?
To do. Yeah, I was very good with the ball, as in I could do lots of tricks, and I always felt, dribbling, I always had very good control. It was one of the things I could do. As I said, many, many faults, don't get me wrong, but things like that I've just found really easy. Even now, 10, 12, 13, 14 years since I've retired.
And talking of retirement, having heard it from Paul, what was the moment for you two when you thought, that is it for me? When do you know as a pro?
I knew when I had the phone call from Strictly Come Dancing.
That was it, was it? Are you joking? Or was that the moment you thought, actually, if I'm going to do that?
Well, I had a chance. I was at Derby County. I was playing Paul. Nigel Clough was a manager. And he said, you can have another year, be on very reduced money. You won't play as often. I was the type of character that had to play every week. I was a sulker if I didn't play. And I thought, travelling to Derby from Manchester every day, not going to play as much. And then I knew, maybe, I seen it, the media, I thought, I've got an opportunity now, because I wasn't a great player. I wasn't, by word had a word, I achieved the maximum of my ability. But I thought, if I go into the media now and work hard at it, I've got a chance, because legends like these guys might be retiring after me. So I thought that was the opportunity for me. Maybe play a year less when I could have carried on, because I was fit. I could run all day. No question. I could have played until I was 40. But I just thought there was an opportunity to do another career when legends, better players than me, were still in the game. And if I was in there and I'd done well and I could build on it, I'd have a good chance in the media, which I've struggled with, to be fair.
It's done all right.
But I went on Strictly and I was magnificent, and the public loved me.
And he's not even joking, though. That's the best bit.
How did you do?
I was all right. Quarter-final.
What about you, Maka? I mean, you had some injuries.
I think it was easy for me. I had my body was virtually telling me to stop, to be very honest. I felt I'd lost a yard of pace.
Yeah.
Times when you'd used to be able to run away from defenders, I couldn't. I was in agony every morning when I get out of bed. It'd take me an hour to get my stride and to walk. I probably needed both Achilles operated on, which means a long-term injury process, rehabilitation process. Didn't think it was fair for the people who would have paid me money to be out for 8-9 months at my age. So I said to the wife early on, well, with a couple of months left to the end of the season, I'm stopping at the end of the season. I wasn't happy. I wasn't playing well, and I was slower than I once was, and that was my main trait, really. So I knew in my mind that the body was telling me to stop.
The most significant thing is, I think, for the three of us, we knew when it was time. It wasn't taken away from us with an injury. You know, I can't imagine what the lads who have been injured when the career's taken away
someone
from
them. Someone like early. Ryan Mason, who, you know, 26 years old, and there's no choice.
Jermaine Genus, who works for us on BT, retired young. So for me, because I didn't make this to retire, that would really have hurt me. But because we all made the decision, we knew we can live with that, but I can't imagine when it's been taken away from you. It must be horrific.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, I enjoyed that chat this evening. That was a good hour and 15 minutes that's disappeared. Thank you for your company. Before you go, though, let me just let you know about some other bits and pieces from BT Sport. And look at that for a week. Not bad, is it, when you look at it like this? Chelsea against Barcelona Tuesday from 7 o'clock. And then it's the UEFA Youth League. Liverpool against Manchester United. 2:45, that's Nicky Butt's Man United against Steven Gerrard's Liverpool. That is worth a watch on Wednesday afternoon if you're not at work. And then Sevilla against Manchester United Wednesday evening from 7. And then Celtic take a lead to Zenit. And Arsenal are pretty much already through against Östersund's 3-0 from the first leg for them. What a sort of strange day all in all, isn't it? A kind of a good game, totally dominated by VAR. It was just a weird one. But look, thanks for being with us. Really enjoyed that show, as always. And thank you for your comments as well. The last word is yours. Good night.
Cracking stuff there. Through to the FA Cup quarter final. We get to see Acacia score on his debut and Joa scores as well.
That was the Swansea of old. Lazy, no desire. We don't want that team back.
We had chances. Probably unlucky not to win it. Now we've got to go there and we've got to get the job done.
Salomon Rondon scored probably one of the goals of the cup this year, but still wasn't enough for Albion.
Both of our goals are very good. We passed it around very well. Tadic had a great game, so did Lamina, and we're through to the quarterfinals.
Well, thanks for listening to this special FA Cup edition of our Premier League Tonight podcast. Next week, we'll be at Vicarage Road as Watford take on Everton. Make sure you join us then on BT Sport. And if you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, give us a 5-star rating and leave us some incredibly flattering reviews. We always like those. Bye for now.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.